Inside Lacrosse Podcasts, the source of the sport.
Back in studio for the final episode of the season, National Championship Edition. We have a few things to review here. We're definitely going to dive in a bunch to that game. And then in addition to kind of really diving into that game, the bulk of this episode will also be about our final top 20 matchups. And then plug in a little bit, making sure you guys are keeping your eyes out for next week when we're going to have the final edition of the top 30. Kind of slow playing, teasing a little bit the D3 Nation here.
You need to string it along a little bit.
Bingo, I don't think anybody's ready for all of this dump and then move on with their lives.
Why would you want to get rid of it?
Yeah, let's let this thing bleed out. Let this thing bleed out a little bit, you know?
Exactly. Yep, I'm with you here, Dan. It's awesome to be in studio. I am real sad it's our last night here, but, you know, it's been a heck of a season, and, man, you know, I've had fun every bit of the way. Can't wait to dive into it here with you.
And it is currently June 1st, Thursday, about 10 o'clock, right on the other side of 10 o'clock.
Yep.
And we had busy days, so had to kind of delay a little bit, but we are glad to get here and get it in. Tomorrow should be this thing dropping, so you should be getting this to your ears and on Friday, June 2nd.
Yep.
And, man, it should be an awesome episode. We were able to get there in person to the D3 National Championship the D2 National Championship.
I got to thank you again for that.
Talk
man.
About that. Oh, yeah, of
you
course.
You get me in there, you know?
Yeah.
Hold on
to your personal sentiments here for a minute. We'll get there. Mm-hmm. Goodness, you can tell he's chomping at the bit, ready to talk not just D3 lax, but talk about all the good times we had on Sunday.
Oh, it was a blast.
All right. It's about that time here. What do you say, buddy?
Let's go, man. I can't wait. It was just such an awesome weekend. We got one giant game to break down here. And, boy, it was a lot of fun just from the get-go. So you want to kind of recap where we were?
Nope.
No, not at all. Okay. Nope. Where do you want to start this thing, then?
Where we always start.
Okay.
Giving the listeners what they really want.
I wanted to get into the game. You're right. I forgot about our loyal listeners.
We have two things we need to hit before we get into
interests.
Per tradition, per the entire season, which, I mean, we can't go breaking rhythm now.
Yep. Yeah,
and
right.
Actually,
fair.
Before we do any of that, I don't know for a fact that everybody who's listening right now is going to make it to the end. So we'll do a quick thank you to the old D3 Nation real quick.
Yeah.
And then we'll give another one at the end that's maybe a little more
heartfelt.
But for those of the listeners who aren't going to make it to the end but are currently with us, we appreciate you guys.
We just thank you so much from the bottom of our hearts for being here with us the full season. I mean, it's been an incredible run. Week zero, preseason, we were up in this booth, up in here doing it.
Yes, you know? It has been an awesome run.
Yeah.
We had a little stint there in the middle with the Mexico causing some issues. And then the week back with all sorts of hectic. But these things happen.
Mm-hmm.
D3 pod, D3 life, sometimes you have some challenges outside of, you know, the money world up there with the big podcasts.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And, you know, those things happen.
Exactly, but we power through. We gave you guys, you know, some great content. I thought it was a blast just being here, you know, just being along for the ride. It was really, you know, Dan provided most of the analytical insights, but, you know, I'm here, I'm enjoying it. I have a lot of fun, and gives me a reason to, you know, watch all this D3 lacrosse and not feel like I'm watching it just to watch it, you know. You know, I'm chatting it up with you, loving every second of it. So appreciate you, Dan, for what you do, and you, the listeners, for tuning in and listening up to us.
And I got some stats here, some hard-hitting numbers.
Oh, wow.
Just kidding. No actual statistics.
Okay.
But I will say that numbers are up, baby.
Oh.
D3 scoreboard numbers, up. Content numbers, up. D3 LaxPod numbers, up. D3 everything, up. And that's a tribute to our awesome fans, listeners, parents, alumni, committed players that are you know, doing the extra work on and off the field, but then also finding a little time to sneak in some D3 pod action too.
You know, you plug that. Those are the real heroes of the D3 pod, baby. Perfect time to listen.
Give us content on the field and then give us numbers off the field.
Love it. Absolutely love it. Thank you guys.
All right. So now that that's out of the way, that was agenda 1A. Agenda 1B. We need to hear about the swarm update, right?
Yeah, of course.
We had some practices go down. No games since the last.
Yep. And right? I think that's why that, I oversaw it a little bit, just because there's been no games. But right. We've been in the lab a lot.
That's the important part. That's what the people want to hear. They care less about your results.
Yep.
They want to know about your team culture. They want to know about your coaching strategies. And they want to know about, you know, they already know about what happened in the spring.
Exactly.
You're already into the off season. How are you addressing your flaws to be ready for summer?
Yep. So we have one new addition for our summer tournament. First summer tournament's coming this weekend, actually. So we're pretty hype about that. But, you know, I've installed a couple new things defensively.
Wait. Say that again?
What? We got one new player coming in.
Uh-huh.
Yep. He's going to be guest playing for us for the tournament for a couple tournaments.
Tournament this weekend already?
This weekend will be our first tournament. Yes.
Wow.
You got that right.
Summer season kicks off quick.
We do all three of our tournaments.
Where is it?
It's in like Calvert.
Oh, you're done
County.
In June.
Yeah. So we get it all out in
Is
June.
That part of your pitch? You tell your families they get the
whole July off. Yeah. We also have big soccer people, so they have a lot of soccer tournaments in July and then August. So we make sure they're free for soccer after that.
Sketch.
Very.
That's the least. That's the last thing I wanted you to say.
Trust me, I know, but they're young. You gotta let them have fun, play a couple different sports. The multi-sport athletes are always the best, right? That's what you look for in recruiting.
Yep. I guess.
Yep.
I mean, I like my lacrosse players to play lacrosse in the summer. But
that's also true.
But I guess you got a point if you're trying to turn, you know, lemons into lemonade.
Yeah, we're working our way there. Anyway, though, I've installed some great stuff defensively. We got some. Oh, I threw in the ice pick check last practice, actually.
Did you really?
I sure did.
Why?
Because it's cool. It's cool. The kids loved it.
I hope you get flags into oblivion.
We definitely will get one this weekend for it, but we'll see. But more importantly, I threw in a pressure zone look that they've really started to perfect.
People also call pressure zone just man that is like built in slides, but okay.
It's somewhat that, but I think it's really helping them that they get the concept of the zone so well. So yeah. As long as they can stay in that formation but still go out and press their guys, I think that's helping them quite a bit.
It's not a bad strategy for teaching them essentially a man. Is to tell them they're in zone behind one person applying pressure.
Yep, and then the rest of them are helping behind when in all reality.
That's man defense. That is man defense.
Exactly. We're getting there the long way. We're going the long way about it, but we're going to get there.
You know who Patrick is, right?
Yeah.
Have I ever explained to you that every time some sort of conversation like this comes up, he pitches me on the idea that every youth team should be running exclusively zones until they are like basically in high school or like middle school.
That would suck for a lot of people, but why is that?
Because of the exact concepts that we're talking about. Is in order to run a zone defense, like you have to get the idea of help defense. And if you already get the idea of help defense, sliding, scheming, like rotations, all that type of stuff, then when you go to apply it to being in a man defense and that's like what you're already used to is like sliding, rotating, helping, then it is a easier fix and an easier like transition.
I see what you're saying there. Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I don't know.
It would
Patrick
kind of
has
to watch.
Patrick sometimes has some
the youth lacrosse, but I see what you're. I see the point there.
Patrick has unique takes.
Yeah, I like the takes. They're hot, perfect for this pod here.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Yeah. But yes, so that's where we're at. We got three summer tournaments, but I do want to say quickly, we got our tryout numbers in. We have a record number of kids coming out this summer.
And that was the most club coach speak thing I've ever heard in my life.
Well, no.
Record number, it's our second year.
It's like our fourth year. Record numbers, but the reason I brought it up was not to brag or anything like that, but just to shout out the D3 Nation, you know?
Oh, you think I don't think that's what's driving Reggie's?
I don't think we get there without D3 Nation pushing the Swarm, so appreciate all the love out there. Appreciate all the support. And go Swarm. Yeah.
Unbelievable. All right, and now into part two. So we've hit 1A, 1B, which was our way of giving three, but we said we would do two in the beginning, so we hit 2 points there, not three. Mm-hmm. So for all you mathematicians out there.
There's quite a bit.
Is it mathematicians or math magicians?
It's definitely the former.
Have we had this conversation before?
Yeah, I don't think it's a magician.
I feel like we have.
Yeah. I feel like magician's very wrong. Very wrong.
It works. It's not wrong, actually.
It flows, but a math magician, I don't know.
He's magic with numbers.
That's just my accountant. Shout out Wheeler.
He's a math magician.
Yeah, that's true. All right, I'll give that to you.
All right, so point three. How was your weekend? How was your Sunday?
How was my Sunday?
Yeah.
My Sunday was spectacular, Dan.
Did you wake up a little groggy? Do you recall chatting Saturday night?
I do recall. Okay. Was that the O's game?
No, you were not.
Oh, this was this game. Yeah. It was a long Saturday. I had made it home at that point.
Yes, there you
eating
go.
Eating crabs.
There you go. Yes. Nope.
No.
They were not there yet.
Okay.
You were about to eat crabs.
Awaiting the crabs.
Yeah, actually, I think technically they got there while we were on the phone.
Got it. Okay. I was very excited when the crabs got there.
The way you said I was at the O's game with so much confidence.
I also saw a buddy I work with at the O's game. He was like, hey, I saw you, and I waved, and you just looked straight ahead. And I was like, yeah, sorry. It was a long day, hot sun, you know. Oh, man. But little groggy, but I couldn't be groggy for long because I was just too pumped. I was too excited.
The emotions of the day kickstarted you?
They got me going, and I was like, there's no shot we're going to be groggy.
So when did it kick in that you were going to be, like, field access, like, kind of, you know, like, in the mix, you know? Like, definitely not going as just a fan to a game.
Because I've been there as a fan, and right. I think driving there still felt normal and everything, but it was when I got pulled up to the media lot, and they were like, oh, can I see your media pass? And I was like,
whoosh, right.
Right here. And they were like, oh, okay, here you go.
Yeah.
VIP access.
After that, they do start treating you, like, really well.
Yes, and I was like, whoa, okay, this is sweet. And it just got sweeter from there. So I would say, moment I parked, game changer.
Let's dive into something that I think might be a little bit upsetting.
Okay.
When you walked in after I told you there was cheesesteaks on day one and there were no cheesesteaks on day two.
There was not.
How drastically did your mood drop, and what was the vibe after that moment?
It was a slight bummer, we'll say, but they still had a delicious, what was it, like pork cheese sandwich sort of deal? I think it was pork. It was a little salty, but
yes,
it was delicious.
It was pork.
Yeah, it was pork.
And then the next day was like pulled brisket, like pulled chicken sandwiches.
Course. How good was it?
Good, but in Jordy's words, he wasn't necessarily inclined to leave a Yelp review.
Got it.
That was a on the spot description.
Okay.
He's a bit of a brisket, like barbecue kind of connoisseur.
Oh,
so
okay.
He's, you know.
Yeah. High standards. Yep.
Well said.
Mm, I like that.
Great minds.
All right. But yeah, it was a little salty, but I will say the cookie selection.
The snickerdoodles were
out of bounds.
Snickerdoodles.
Yeah. The softest cookies I've ever had.
They were well done.
I think every time I walked by them, I had to grab one.
You ready for a hot take that I haven't unleashed to you yet?
Go for it.
Now, as much as I enjoyed the food selection,
yeah,
I believe we could take probably a portion of that budget and somehow allow the players on each team to go onto the sidelines with their teams.
Oh, and have like the full roster on the field?
Yeah, rather than those guys being in, because that's, you know, the claim is cashola, right? And like
true.
Keeping teams even.
True.
Well, let's just take some of the cash, maybe a little downgrade on the old cheesesteaks, right? And let's get those boys on the field.
True. You make a good point. It would definitely suck to lose the cheesesteaks that I never got to have.
Maybe, you know, 3, 4, 10, 15 less of the personnel staff and
true.
Some boys on the field.
There was a lot of staff, a lot of staffing for a massive stadium. But I agree with you. Yeah, I think that's a big bummer. And it's surprising because that was still something that we were battling with back in the tournament.
It's always been.
But, you know, it's always been that way, which is, you know, you have.
Every year somebody brings it up at the end of the year, like in some sort of meeting or conference or whatever, that, like, in theory would have power over it. And nothing really comes of it. I don't know what it would take.
Yeah. It just stinks for those guys that work with their, you know, their team for all year just to, you know, have to watch from the sidelines.
And
big bummer. But
and of all things, like, you know, I'm not going to go necessarily throwing the NCAA, you know, a ton of bones here. But if I had to, I would say, like, okay, maybe it makes sense for the situations where you have a team from out west who's flying, you know, far, and, you know, that becomes costly.
Mm-hmm.
The national championship game, the kids are already there. They should just be on the field in pads.
Yeah.
Like, it's the national championship game. It's the last game of the season. They're there. Like, it makes no sense.
I'm with you. I'm riding with you.
I know you are.
Yep. I'll agree with you on
that. I didn't expect to see for you to give me much of a rebuttal on that one.
No.
I don't know who would.
As long as the cookies got to stay, I'd be fine with it. Yeah. Take the snickerdoodles away, there would be riots.
Let's go bulk. All snickerdoodles. If we went all snickerdoodles by the time we, like, cost per snickerdoodle.
Yeah.
Assuming that we buy in bulk.
100%.
You know, that would be the way to go. It's the best option of the ones that were there anyways.
True. You still keep the soda fountain open. That's cheap. Bada bing, bada boom. You're good.
I think some of the big J's there would have had a heart attack if no soda.
Yeah. Yeah. You have to keep the soda machine open. And that iced tea was flowing, too. Those teas were just going off the shelf. Right. The
what
pretzels
a time.
Were a nice touch, though.
Pretzels were great.
Mm, really nice touch. Very classy. Very Philly.
D2 game, not so great.
Yeah, you know, I was hoping for a nice warm-up game that would, you know, get the vibes going, which the vibes were high. I'm not saying that it was a low vibe game at all, because the fans were there. They were bringing it.
The vibes weren't that high.
But
it was kind of a blowout.
As far as the actual game, it was 6-0, which we weren't unfamiliar with watching the D3 game, 6-0-2 into the first quarter. But Lenore Ryan.
You did that the entire day too. Those are two different teams.
Lenore,
they're just two schools.
Ryan.
They're completely two different schools.
It's a
they're not even close.
It's a terrible
Lemoyne's in the
name.
North.
It's an awful it's name. Who would name their
they
school
that?
They just
start with the same letter.
Like, do you have a hyphenated last name and you just decide to start a school? Like, I hope everybody can learn my weird hyphenated last name.
I guess.
That's weird. Yeah. Just name it Ryan or Lenoyne. Whatever. I don't care. Just name it something normal. Mercyhurst is fine.
Just call him LRU.
Yeah.
How about that?
LRU. That kind of works.
LRU and Lemoyne. Two different places. Two different schools.
LRU.
Both in D2. One of them actually is not even in D2 anymore.
Oh, yeah? Mercyhurst out?
Not one of the teams that we're talking about.
Oh, shit.
Lemoyne.
Oh, okay.
Lemoyne is going to Division I.
Oh, okay. Nice.
The team that you... Not Lenore Ryan.
Got it.
There you go.
Check. Figuring this out as we go.
Unbelievable.
I've never claimed to be a D2 guy.
True.
Just admitting that out loud here, right now.
Yeah.
But full support. But yeah, that was a fun one. Got to get onto the field, take some pictures. Yep. Quoted in pictures. Yep. But got some good shots down there and got like some good vibes of the field and whatnot. It was awesome being down there. Got to walk through like the Eagles locker room and that whole walkway and everything. So that was sweet. But yeah, it just got me real hyped and real set for kind of being in the moment for the D3 game.
And then I guess if that's the point in the day that we're at, we should get into the game, huh? There's probably some people that are tired of us ranting and joking and want to hear us talk lax.
I guess so, yeah. We should give them some lax, shouldn't we?
All right. Where should we start?
You want to start with Salisbury's quick start?
Sure. You mentioned they started 6-0.
6-0.
What were you seeing?
So I think I'm going to get into it a little bit later, or I guess we can get into it now if we want, but I think a big surprise for me right out of the gate was Salisbury's not just the face-off like play specifically, but the whole rope unit in general was very sharp, very on point. You know, they didn't make it. It wasn't an even battle, if I remember the stats correctly. But they definitely made them scrap for it, and you know, battled it out pretty good to the point where it wasn't a huge advantage for Tufts, which I thought going in would be a giant advantage for them.
You mean the face-offs?
Correct.
So it's an interesting point, and one that I love that you made. We kind of have similar points here for our live keys, which is fine, whatever. Yeah. Because it was important. It was a big piece of the game.
Also, to be noted, we were sitting right next to each other for a majority of the game. So we were bouncing some thoughts off of each other.
Facts. But, yeah, so to your point, statistically it ended up being heavily in Tufts' favor. I think they won 23 and Salisbury won 9. And 4 of the 9 that they won were in the first quarter.
There you go. Alluded to the hot start.
But that's the point that I'm making is, like, really, that early face-off play is a huge piece of what fueled that run. Like, it kept giving them possessions that that run is what completely is the difference in the game. And it seems like such an obvious thing to say. Like, you can't spot a team like Salisbury 6 goals. Sure. But Tufts being down 6 goals and then their opponent being able to dictate and slow the pace after that because they have a 6-goal lead is totally different than another team just, like, in any other type of a matchup going up by 6, right? Like, 100%. It's another animal. It's a totally different world, particularly with Salisbury, who you know is going to be well-coached through that lead and has the discipline to execute it. Like, so many teams have really good coaches that are smart and can scheme up things, right? Not to take away from Coach Berkman, who, like, 13 in, this was performance or appearance number 20. Like, their run is just incredible. But lots of coaches have had really good game plans and schemes going into things and going into playing Tufts. And a lot of teams have given them troubles, right? But ultimately, the difference is that Salisbury's had the execution, Salisbury's had the discipline that it takes to execute those game plans. Mm. And they're tough. It takes a lot of tough plays. It takes a lot of, like, consistent decisions with that in mind, right? But you can't be overthinking, and you can't be completely thinking about the scout, right? You still have to be playing.
Yeah.
But they find that perfect border of being able to play while making decisions that have the scout in mind. And I think that is, like, the ultimate definition of discipline within lacrosse.
Very, very well said. Yep. I think that's a perfect point, and really led to them getting to some good stuff there.
Why'd you get distracted?
You know, I may have seen something. But another point that I wanted to bring up, which I thought was kind of unique, was with that 6-0 run in the first quarter Salisbury had, we didn't see one person have a score a goal twice except for Bryce Bromwell, who did it with the first and the 6th goal. So besides that, everybody was getting involved.
I was told that we
need
to put more respect on his name.
On Bromwell's name?
Yeah, what do you think about that?
I would like to see it for a full season before I put a lot of respect on his name, but he definitely balled out in this game, for sure. He balled out. I'm not going to take anything away from him in this game because he balled out.
You're such a Siegel hater.
He was an X factor, for sure. He dominated.
Are you going to give him the official label?
I
do it.
Do it.
Do it.
Do it. Do it. Do it. Do it.
So at this point, we've given away the big dog live key, which was Salisbury rope unit. I've given away my big key, which was essentially the same thing, but early face-off play. But I guess in the same, like, vein, you could make it Salisbury's execution with a 6-goal lead that was fueled by said
face-off
rope unit.
Play.
Yeah, kind of a complimentary piece there.
The old 1-2.
Yep, 1-2 punch. And now, unleash the X Factor, baby.
The X Factor?
Yeah.
It was Bryce Bromwell. It sure was. This guy, he was electric. And when you have, you know, Cross Ferreira, Jude Brown, Jack Dowd getting all of this attention, like, you need your 4th, 5th, 6th guys to step up. And that's exactly what Bryce did in this game. You know, he was an absolute X factor, just stinging corners on Garzón. You know, and it was really, like, just shots he really didn't have a chance to save. You know, Tufts was kind of slow to slide, I thought, and it really let Bryce get his hands free quite a bit. So when he was getting those, like, step downs, he was turning. Nobody was on his hands. Hands were free from, you know, 9-10 yards out. You better believe he's going to sting that. And he took advantage of every opportunity he had.
Dude, put her on. Put her on. Put her on. Put her on. Put her on speaker. Put her on speaker. Put her on speaker. Put her on speaker. Put her on speaker.
Hey, Jill. Hey, how's it going?
Good. You busy?
Just recording the podcast.
Hey, Mom.
I'll call you back later.
Oh, okay.
No.
Love you.
Did you watch the championship? Ask her what she thought.
Oh, did you watch the championship game?
I didn't watch the video. I just watched the score.
Watch the score? What do you think about Salisbury winning?
I was very sad.
Very sad. There we go.
Yep.
Tufts had more in them.
Yep. I think very, very well said. All right. Well, I appreciate it.
Hey, tell him congrats on winning the MVP. It's so well deserved.
Thank you so much. I'm very excited. I believe I get a trophy and all sorts of good stuff from it.
A free trip to Rio, right?
Yes, yeah. That's right.
There we go.
All expenses paid.
Oh, good. All right, well, I'll talk to you soon. Love you.
Love you. Bye.
Unbelievable.
All right, and that's Mama Big Dog.
I started looking around like, what is that noise?
Yeah, what is that shaking?
Who still has the phone on vibrate?
I mean, I don't want it to ring out loud.
No, whatever. That was amazing. Though. I'm glad. I see where you get your sequel hater from.
Yeah, I mean,
is it in the genes?
It's rooted in me. You see, saying all this nice stuff, and we're gonna have to say more nice stuff about him. It pains me to my core.
I actually love it.
Yeah.
Oh, golly. Oh,
man. Now she's texting, trying to backtrack on her Salisbury 8.
Oh, she did.
But I have to respect Salisbury. They always find a way to win. Don't backtrack on it, Mom. Stand firm.
Tell her she's not wrong.
Yeah, no. I'm agreeing with her.
She ain't wrong. We should get her live in the studio.
We'll save that for next year.
Yeah.
Next year, true.
Yeah. All right. That was the greatest interruption in D3 Lax podcast history. Unbelievable. All right, but we are literally bouncing all over the place on this game. We've went through some of our fun fact award winners, givers, awards to give for the national championship game.
Yep.
But we haven't really talked about the rest of the game flow. So let's kind of finish that out, and then we'll start talking about more the game as a whole.
Yep. Sounds all right. Good.
So they go up 6-0. End of the quarter happens. And I very vividly recall you saying, like, here comes the run.
Yep.
And I feel like that became kind of the vibe throughout the rest of the game was, like, people were just kind of holding their breath saying, like, okay, they're going to make some sort of, like, crazy run
coming
at some point.
Just when is it going to
come? And how, like when would Salisbury stop the bleeding when it did come? Like, how would they stop the bleeding when it came? And, like, to what degree, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then, like, in truth, they had answers exactly to that point. Like, they were able to cut that bleeding and stop it pretty quickly. And like we said earlier, they at that point, like, the game becomes pretty even. It's a little bit of a Tufts tilt. But Salisbury's not, like, foot to the pedal for the rest of the game. Like, they have a 6-goal lead. They need to be getting deep in shot clocks and need to be doing all these, like, you know, working, like, making Tufts defend for, you know, 60 seconds and defend through multiple resets and things like that. And, like, that's exactly what they ended up doing throughout the course of it. And that may result in, you know, less onslaughts of offense, but still plenty of goals. And not just, you know, plenty, but, you know, that's what it takes to win the game at that point.
Exactly, yeah. And if we can talk X's and O's real quick,
I would
especially
love to.
In this
you
part
know.
Of aspect of the game.
You
I know,
know
this
me.
Is your bread and butter.
You know
talk
me.
About that Salisbury 1-4-1 with the sweep, because they ran it about 50 times, and it worked 49 times.
Yeah, we talked about that going into it, right? We talked about that last week, I feel like.
Yep. And so Tufts' game plan was really what, to slide slow or quickly to that?
Yeah, no, you were right earlier when we were talking through it, but
yeah,
they were
slight,
slow
they were,
to go to those guys.
They were really slow to that, yeah.
And not necessarily to the first one. Like, they didn't have to go to the first dodge, and a lot of time that was, you know, being initiated on a pole.
But what Salisbury did early on it was they kept that initial dodge as the dodge. They scored on it early, which made Tufts start to slide to it eventually.
And, well, really what they were able to hit them on was the forwards to then sweeping.
Yes.
Right? That Nestor getting to his left hand, getting to the middle of the field. Bromwell sweeping over the top, getting to his right hand. Like, those guys were then able to get to the middle of the field on the tough short sticks. And, you know, like, to your point, those not just Bryce Bromwell, but, like, Luke Nestor also had an awesome game. Mm-hmm. And early in the game, they were kind of short-sticking Isaac Thrasher, and it felt like not necessarily from, like, a dodging aspect, but he was able to just do enough, and, like, the offense was able to function well enough within it that it just didn't disrupt them. And they've seen that look plenty over the last, you know, year and a half, 2 years that group has been, you know, running together.
100%. Yep. Love that. But, yeah, so keep us going here. So what really jump-started this Jumbo's run that we saw in the second quarter? I see a lot of Kurt Bruin, you know, in the stat sheet in this point in time. What did you see from him that really made him an X factor in this second quarter?
Yeah, so he was able to get going a little bit. Charlie Tagliaferri gets one. But, you know, to your point earlier about Tufts' defensive scheme, it's actually very similar to Salisbury, and really going into it, particularly when I went to do, like, preview stuff, I was like, yeah, Tufts' defense. They like to hold matchups, show to the ball, hedge it twice, and see if they can, you know, show to a dodge and then get back and play their own guy if the ball goes to them there. And as I'm writing all of that, I'm like, yeah, this seems really familiar. Salisbury's been doing this for a really long time with a shutoff guy. Mm-hmm. And I think this might be a situation where we see a whole two ends of the field where defensively you're getting a lot of people being asked to own their matchups while help defenders are asked to show adjacent and then get back to their own guy. And that was kind of happening on both ends. Salisbury's been doing that for forever. And they're incredible at it, right? Like, they have totally dictated and changed the rhythm of offenses for years on it. Tufts is also very good at it. It just so happens that on this day, Salisbury was able to hold matchups a bit better than Tufts was. And over the course of the season, Tufts has not only been able to do it, but they've been able to be disruptive in it by then sliding and getting deep in hands or sliding to the back of the head. But in order to really be able to slide to the back of the head of a Dodger effectively, you need your cover to be playing really physically or to be engaged at least. And that wasn't happening enough for Tufts to be able to really time those up and go and be disruptive. Mm.
Very, very well said and broken down. That's why we go to you for the X's and O's. Love it. All right. So,
and I actually was empowered by the head honchos, Kinnear and Mr. T. Foy, that are method here after the games was going to be that they would handle game stories while I kind of took like a takeaways type of a thing. And that was one of my main takeaways. What defensively, both schemes are so similar, but in this day or on that day, Salisbury was able to win the matchups and score unassisted goals, and Tufts struggled a bit more on the other side to do the same thing.
Yep, agreed. Yep. So moving on here, so we saw I think it was a 4-5 goal swing from Tufts. They go from 10-2 all the way to 10-6 up into the third quarter, where we finally get a cross Ferreira goal to make it 11-6. But you know, it gets really close in this third quarter. It's battling back and forth, and it gets up to what, 11-9, I'm pretty sure. Mason Kahn scoring a goal right after Kurt Bruin gets one as well. So that makes it that 11-9, and then that's when I look over to McNair and I'm like, this is the Tufts run that I've been talking about, that I've been telling you about all day. I told you it was coming. Here it is. They've stormed back and made it a game. And, boy, we thought we were in for a good one there, didn't we?
Yeah, at that point we thought, you know, like, at this point it's going to become neck and neck. You know, going to be neck and neck here down to the wire. Can't really favor one team either way. Tufts has a bit of momentum. Salisbury 2-goal lead here. Going to be tight. And then Jude Brown, man up goal.
Yep.
And that's off of an awesome feed from Jack Dowd. And I immediately remember turning to you and saying, like, yeah, like, check his assist numbers from last year. He's as much of a, you know, good stretch shooter he is, and as much of attention as he deserves for that. He's also a really good feeder. He has awesome vision and then has all the confidence in the stick skills that it takes to, like, throw, you know, an awesome skip with tons of power right to someone's ear. And then, boom, shows right there. And the thing is, you have to extend and get to his hands because of the point that I was just making, his ability to stretch shoot. And when you have to extend and get to his hands, that's when lanes open, right? When teams have to get out and or you have to rotate to be able to get to his hands. Now you're rotating and he's looking through, right? That's when all that feeding and his ability to kind of hit you there ends up showing through. And boom, national championship game, finds Jude Brown, makes a two-goal game with tons of Tufts momentum, back to a three-goal game and Salisbury kind of dictating.
Yep, yep. And then that takes us into the fourth quarter, which is kind of getting all Salisbury momentum. Salisbury gets two kind of quick ones right there to make it 14-9. And then at that point, you feel like, all right, if the Jumbos are going to do anything, now's kind of going to be the time. And, you know, the Jumbos did score next to make it 14-10, but Salisbury really possessed the ball. Like, they were using all of the shot clock, like you talked about earlier, really executing the game plan to the T, where when they scored that goal with 12, I think it was like 12:20 left, there wasn't a goal from the Jumbos again until like 7 minutes. So we saw a full 5 minutes, which is normally when we see Tufts kind of come over and start to dominate and bleed teams out, which they haven't really been down too much this year. So it is kind of tough to say, like, how are they going to play when they're down? I was kind of expecting them to still have that rah-rah comeback.
Yeah, you made the point that there was, like, nobody built better to be able to come back, which I understand your point because they can score so quickly and they can score directly off of a face-off, right? Like, they even had that happen in this game. They get one and then immediately score off of the next one. So two-goal swings happen. You know, they score on that one, then win the next possession, then score there. You know, like, right away you're just stacking goals on top of each other, and it's – totally, like, I get your point. I lost my train of thought. I had a good butt, too.
I think I knew your butt. What? I think it was butt because Tufts hasn't played from behind.
Oh, yeah,
all
yeah,
year.
Yeah, yeah,
yes.
There it is. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's a good one.
You nailed it.
Yep.
But, because they haven't played from behind all year, they don't necessarily have that experience. And now you have, like, the nerves of losing in the national championship setting in on top of, like, the nerves of you haven't necessarily had to do this a whole ton all season on top of, like, you know, everything else and the moment and the weight of it. Like, and I'll say that one point that I think kind of sums it up in a nutshell is you have the one situation where a Tufts player is coming up the right-handed hash with the stick in his left hand and takes a backhand shot one-handed that goes over the top of the goal.
I remember that one.
And remember we talked about earlier, Salisbury always has the shut-off guy, and in that moment the shut guy was behind the goal. The ball hits the shut guys and becomes a ground ball. Salisbury wins that ground ball, goes down, kills plenty of time, has a nice long sustained possession, and then it ends up in a Luke Nestor topside goal where he kind of just sweeps over the top and sticks one. And, you know, I don't recall exactly what that ends up making the lead, but I think that sequence kind of sums up the game in the nutshell, where, like, Tufts was feeling rushed and felt like they had to take a shot that they typically might be able to find a better one because they would be winning matchups better. But because they weren't winning matchups the way they were and they were down, they end up settling for that shot. And then it creates a ground ball that Salisbury wins, because that happened plenty, particularly outside of non-faceoff ground balls, right? And then it ends up being a long Salisbury possession down the other end that resulted in a goal on a short stick from Salisbury beating a short stick from Tufts for an unassisted goal.
Which,
like, I think that sequence kind of sums up the national championship game right there.
Really? Yeah, that's a really good point and something we pointed out in the moment. So glad you saw it there. And then, yeah, after that, like we talked about, you know, it's 14-10, but, you know, Salisbury goes on a two-goal run, and it's kind of over after
that. Yeah, and Tufts has to start extending. The goalie's out of the goal. They're just killing time.
Exactly.
All right, so – time to get into some larger takeaways. That's kind of the gist of how the game played out, right?
Yep, like, that's the game flow. Yeah, that's how it all broke.
Salisbury did an incredible job of slowing transition. There were a few keys in it. obviously transition off the faceoff. We talked about one way that they negated that was they were putting a short stick D-mid at attack to make the smooth transition in the sub.
Which I know, knowing, I pointed out to you.
You sure did. Knowing that they were going to end up, like, that they were likely to lose the faceoff. And even if they won the faceoff, they were going to be slow anyways. So you had plenty of time to sub them and get your right personnel back on the field.
Yep.
Right? So who cares? And so that ended up being a great strategy to help kind of limit the sub and make that happen just a little bit more seamlessly and a little bit quicker. And then, like we said, they had all the discipline in the world that it took to make sure you're not taking, you know, bad shots right into Garzone's stick that then are giving, you know, clean outlets. Like, that didn't happen to my recollection one time, right?
Yep.
Like, none of that type of stuff happened, and, you know, they're sitting here with 13.
Yep. Very well said. So you want to get into some bigger takeaways we thought from the game? I had one big one that kind of was sitting on my mind a little bit.
Yeah, it looks like we have a couple more left of our keys on the outline.
Yep. Love it. Yep. So one big takeaway that after I've had some time to sit here and think about a little bit was if you're just kind of like a casual fan, maybe you're a Tufts fan or something like that, and you've been watching a lot of them, and you're like, wow, Garzone was just lighting it up all tournament, and then maybe this game you didn't see as much as you've seen in the past games, and you were wondering where that was.
Yeah.
Well, I think we just hit on it in that recap, but Tufts was so slow to slide on those Salisbury guys, but when they got their hands free from 10, they were just letting it go. And
yeah,
I'm telling you, you let anybody, any six guys from Salisbury on that offense with their hands free from 10
strong
yards,
hands to the middle of the field,
it's going to
lights
go
out.
In. It does not matter who it is. So if you start off a game like that, you know, letting the shooters get your hands free, it's going to be tough to get into rhythm and get to see the ball like that. And credit to him, because he never gave up in this game. He battled back.
And the Salisbury crowd was ruthless. They were in his ear.
Giving it
heavy.
Hard. So, no, I would say, you know,
that's a tough scenario, man.
It's just,
you start the game going down 6-0 in the national championship, and you have, you know, 1,000 golden people that have been maybe indulging.
Yes.
Just ripping you, you know?
Oh, man. Yeah, it was bad.
Chanting your name.
Yeah. In a negative connotation.
Yeah.
Yep. It was tough. And I mean, tough game plan for him, you know, just like, I guess they were going in thinking, we hope Connor is hot right from the start because we're going to need him early like that. You know, and that's just tough for a goalie, especially in a big game like that. You want to get him some easy ones early, let him get in rhythm, and that just wasn't able to happen for him. So, you know, I don't think this is on him at all. I think, you know, game plan wise, they should go back and maybe think about how they can get the goalies, you know, maybe in a little bit more of a rhythm in big games like this.
And as a, you know, comparison down the other end, so, I mean, Tufts had 4 saves in the first quarter. Salisbury didn't have any. It also happens that there were no shots on goal goal.
Which,
but
zero tough shots on goal
and
for
two
an
shots,
entire quarter?
2 shots total.
Like, what?
I think we'd have to go back a long time until we found a situation, a box score that featured 2 shots from Tufts in a
I would have to
quarter.
Agree.
All right, so moving on. Next point, what else you got here? You have one more thing left up there. I'm ready for it. The big dog MVP of the game.
Yes, the big dog MVP of the game. It's got to be none other than Nick Ransom. This guy absolutely went out there and
leave it to you.
Oh, I picked a goalie.
To pick a goalie.
I know. But hey,
you biased bastard.
I talked about it earlier. Salisbury was distributing the ball so well on offense. I don't think there was any one person you could point to and say, like, they were the deciding factor. You know, I think you have to go on the defensive end of the ball. And when you do that,
you
Nick
think so?
Ransom, I mean, unless you want to give it to their entire offense, or if you just want to be a huge, you know, kiss ass, you can just give it to Berkman for his game plan. But I'm not going to go that route, and I'm just going to say that Nick Ransom played his balls off.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear anything you said. I went blind with rage about 15 seconds ago. Who?
Oh, Coach Berkman. Excuse me.
Unbelievable.
Excuse me. What's with that?
I don't get it.
What? Yeah, it's his name.
Blind with rage.
Yeah. I mean, I respect
it. I mean, deaf with rage.
Yeah. There you go. But no, Nick Ransom, what do you have, 16 saves on 16. The day? Yep, and he was just absolutely incredible. So he was a big reason where, you know, we see these big Tufts runs all the time. He was a big reason that they weren't getting those because he was absolutely stuffing people, whether it was on the crease or hands free from 12. Like, he was doing all of it.
Yeah, and a variety of saves. And the other thing that's interesting as a goalie when you play Tufts, I feel, I mean, basically any team that's going to, like, rack up a large volume of shots on you, you see a million shots from a million different angles and release points. And he was just eating all of them up. You 100%. Know, like, there was shots that were coming at him from shooters that were falling down, shots that were coming at him from feeds inside, shots that were coming at him from, you know, dead center hands free. You know, not many of those.
Yeah.
But point being, like, whatever the shot was, he seemed to be, you know, in the zone, locked in, seeing the ball well. And Coach Denofo in the post-game press conferences actually shouted him out, said that he felt like it was one of the best that he's ever seen him play.
Yep. Yeah. So I have to agree with Coach there.
All right, moving on. So that's your game MVP. The other thing to mention here, right, Cross Ferreira ends up finishing here as an unbelievable number of points here throughout his career, 474 to finish the season.
Mm-hmm.
Finishes second in career points. Only other person more than that is Ryan Gebhardt, who also had the 6 years.
Yep.
He's now, this is 122 points this season. That's the third season in a row that he's eclipsed 100. And he made it through cuts for the Chrome.
Looks I saw like he's on the roster.
Looks like he's going to be on the game day roster, yeah. But not just on the game day roster,
they
but
only have
playing.
Three attackmen. Yeah,
and starting at attack.
Three.
Yeah,
there we go.
Over Dylan Malloy, who I don't know if you've ever heard of him, but
he was pretty good.
Yeah, exactly. So that is quite exciting. So you get to keep that career going. But he hadn't won one, right? So as illustrious as that career was, multi-time. You know, single individual season player of the year type awards between attackman of the year and USILA player of the year. You know, he's racked in both of those over the course of his career, and didn't have a ring, but now he's gets to add national champion to that arsenal as well.
Yep. Very good for him. Very illustrious career, and you know, excited to watch him play. Maybe get some time against Ryan Kennedy or Matt Witcher, you know. That would be a fun matchup.
Did you say that on purpose? Did I already tell you this?
No. Oh, is there?
Do you know who the Chrome scrimmaged in training camp this week?
Did they do the Redwoods? Oh, did Kennedy match up on him? Oh, and then that's why they have that clip of like, oh, Kennedy's out here just eating people up today.
No, I think that was from practices, different days.
Okay, all right.
Yeah, that was before that happened.
Okay.
I happen to have some inside sources over there. Got a sneak peek at a picture of somebody, a.k.a. Ryan Kennedy, guarding somebody else, a.k.a. Cross Ferreira, for a little D3 on D3 in the PLL world.
That's awesome. Yeah. That is so sick.
And then Max Wayne also made the 19-man roster, but as a reserve. So
okay.
In the mix.
Still in the mix?
In the mix.
Yep.
And Coach Thompson is going to be... is that their defensive coordinator
for the Cannons? Yep. Correct. Yeah.
Yep. So you got a little extra rooting interest there, but also you have Coach Drenner, Ryan Drenner, on that squad as well. So,
Man. And
then the D3 love continues with the Water Dogs. You got Eli Gobrick there for Ithaca.
There we go.
Which leads me, actually, I'm glad that we got here. I have it on the outline to hit at the end, but while we're on it, real quick, unbelievable career here for Coach Long.
Oh,
36
yeah.
years, and we'll hang it up after this season. So congratulations to a legendary coach on an epic career.
Yes. Good stuff there, Coach. Love to hear it. So, Dan, before we move on from this game and, you know, kind of put it away here, do you have, like, an MVP or anything like that you want to take away here?
Yeah, sure. I don't have one on that old outline there, but one person that we haven't talked about that I want to talk about, so I'll just call him the game MVP, John DeFazio.
Mm.
Unbelievable. I mean, he was excellent, particularly down the stretch, in the playoffs, but really all season. And the numbers show it. He had a ridiculous number of ground balls and caused turnovers on the year. He's guarded a ton of good players all over the field, right? Like, guarded midfielders, guarded attackmen, guarded whoever the task has been, has bumped up, will do whatever he needs to, takes every wing just about for Salisbury. And like I said, I mean, he is a ground ball machine.
Couldn't agree more.
And, yeah, he's definitely raised his game here this season. And so, yeah, I mean, I'll shout him out. But also, you know, definitely super impressed on the year, not just in this game.
Yep, that's a great point, Dan. Like that pick. So anything else from this game that you want to point out, shout out, or anything before we kind of tuck it away and move on here?
I mean, we haven't talked much about Tufts. Tough way to go out, right? 22-0, still an awesome season. Only team in NESCAC history to go through and win that undefeated. So quite a accomplishment there. They also set a record for NCAA goals in a season. So another accomplishment there to add to the list for this team. Obviously, they hope to win the national championship, right?
Yep.
It sucks anytime you make it that far and you just fall a little bit short. But still an unbelievable season for them, and something that I'm sure they'll be able to look back on with fond memories and rather than heartbreak, just a matter of how long until that time comes.
Exactly. Yep. It'll definitely come. And I think, you know, they're going to be reloading for sure. They're not a team that goes away. So I think we'll be hearing from them again, obviously, in the years to come. So
yeah, and still have plenty of youth on the team that did, you know, make it there this season. So
100%.
I don't know that I disagree with that point there at all.
Love it. Love it. All right. So let's keep going down the list here. You want to get into some top 20 talk?
A little top 20 talk, yeah.
Yeah, so now that we're officially out of the season, it's time that we kind of take a breath. The final. Yes, it's all over. The dust has settled. I think we had some time to reflect and review and kind of have time to look over now and rank these teams out officially where they land in the top 20 world.
The final.
The final top 20 list. Now, we had some disagreements, but we came together. And I think we came up with a pretty good list here. Wouldn't you agree, Dan?
Of course.
Yep. Yeah, we do pretty good work.
We do that.
Yeah. We disagree, but respectfully.
We work through it. Unbelievable.
Couldn't have said that better myself. Dan, do we have a sponsor for the top 20 here today?
This is going to be sponsored by... Nope.
No sponsor?
Nope.
No.
I got nothing.
That's all right. Yeah, we got... plenty of sponsorship spots open up, though. So if you are an avid listener, business owner that wants to maybe sponsor the pod for next season, feel free to contact us. We're happy to oblige.
We're also cheap.
Yes, we are also cheap. We have done business with, you know, big companies such as Baskin-Robbins, Panera.
Lincoln Financial.
Lincoln Financial. Just to name a couple. Ever heard of them?
Yeah.
You know, kind of a big deal. So after further ado, Dan, you want to get into this list?
I do.
Yep.
And I don't want to just read it out, but as always, you can go and check this bad boy out. We have the top 20 as a poll that is out now. I also will drop a quick little plug, as we already alluded to earlier. We got a top 30 coming. Slow leaking, playing out the final bit of content here a little bit to keep D3 fans engaged for as long as I can. But, yeah, so our final top 30 will come out here on the heels of it. And, yeah, I'm excited to kind of chat through some of the pieces of the puzzle that made it hard and some of the spots that were locked in stone.
Yep. Yeah, very well said. So let's go into it. Let's. You want to go by like threes or fives just to kind of keep it kind of tight so we're not reading down the full list? Let's go down by fives. I like that.
All right.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. Trust me. I got a good vision for this. All right. So top five. Here we go. We got Salisbury at our number one spot. I think that's pretty obvious. And Tufts at our number two. You know, one and two, that's how they finished out. Now three, we threw down CNU. And I think that's pretty clear with, you know, the game that they played against Salisbury versus, you know, what RIT got against Tufts and, you know, how those outcomes went out. So I would go CNU 4, CNU 3, RIT 4, which leaves our fifth spot open for Dickinson. That was a pretty contested one, but I think if you look at the tournament results and how they were playing at the end of the year, I would pick Dickinson over a couple teams like Middlebury and Amherst. Dan, give me some thoughts on those first five.
Yeah, so I don't know what you said exactly. I don't recall about CNU and RIT. I remember as you were saying it, I remember thinking I disagree.
Oh, okay. I think that's tough. CNU gave Salisbury a better game than RIT
gave Tufts. Okay, correct. Got it. Okay, that's it.
And then at the end of the day, Tufts lost to Salisbury, which would make
CNU. So CNU three losses, all three are to Salisbury, who's the national champion, which that helped tilt. But my point being, I think it's really tough still. I think that's a really tough RIT and CNU, but ultimately, like, CNU beat them early in the year in the Mustang Classic, so that obviously helps.
Yeah.
And then the three losses that CNU does have all came to Salisbury, who ended up winning it all, right? So those end up tilting it, but I think RIT was playing really, really well. In the world of, like, college football, these two teams would have played in, like, the Rose Bowl or whatever, like, in whatever the non-national championship, biggest college bowl is. Mm-hmm. And it would have been equally seen as, like, as exciting if as the national championship.
Okay.
Yep. Maybe not quite, but, you know.
Yeah, people would have.
It would have been the biggest bowl game in Division III lacrosse.
Yes. Hands down, for sure. Now, Dickinson with the five spot.
Which maybe that's a great business plan for Inside the Cross. At the end of the year, next year, we got to rent some sort of field, sell some tickets.
Hey, Under Armour just built a giant field.
Yes, we got to take that field out, bring in teams that finish third and fourth to play in the ILD3
We can call it Bowl. Tommy Loins.
D3 Lax Bowl.
Yeah, I'm in.
We can call it.
Oh, yes. All right, I'm now all the way in.
All right, we should figure out how to make that happen.
Yes, I'll talk to people.
All right, do it.
All right, before we move on, Dickinson, number five.
Yeah, that's, again, Dickinson and CNU. We were really close to seeing Dickinson advance, right? Overtime. Both games against CNU have been really tight. Dickinson, you know, I won't say squeaked by Stevens, right? That's not necessarily the right term.
Squeak, no.
Certainly not. They kind of dominated most of the game, and then the score looked a little bit closer than I feel like it actually was. But I was a bit skeptical going into that game. And then Dickinson plays just, you know, really hard, makes a ton of plays. And if not for some silliness in the fourth quarter, we could have seen them winning that game and advancing. You know, 100%. Like, there's another world that exists where they play that fourth quarter a little bit differently and they win that game.
Yep. Very well said. And I think that's a very good reason to put them at five. So good stuff there.
They were tight with Middlebury. Middlebury, I think, is kind of doing the opposite. I was higher on them in the beginning of the season. As the year kind of played out, they kind of dropped.
Faded down the stretch.
Yep, RIT kind of handles them, and even to get to play RIT, they beat St. Mary's by one. Mm-hmm. And, you know, St. Mary's was playing great, playing hard.
St. Mary's, yeah.
You know, doing a lot of good stuff and playing really, really hard and, you know, playing like their life depended on it. But still, you know, Middlebury, obviously, they win the game, but it ain't that pretty, and, you know, a win at this point at that stage in you know tournament play is obviously the most important thing, but for us who's nitpicking between teams, I'm counting that against you.
100%. Yep, I think I am too, and good reason too. So we'll move down this list, go 6 through 10 here. 6, we have Middlebury, as we just talked about. 7, we're gonna put Amherst. I love that pick. 8, we got Washington and Lee. 9, Lynchburg. And 10, Gettysburg. I think we got some interesting picks to go through here. Now, we just touched on Middlebury, talked about them maybe fading down the stretch a little bit. I think the 6th spot is good for him. Now, Amherst up at 7. I love it personally, but why do you also agree with that?
Amherst up there?
Yeah.
I mean, they were strong through the year. They ended up going out to Salisbury, who's good, like, I don't know.
Won the national championship. Well, yeah. They lost by 4, I think.
Yeah.
I think it was 14-10?
Maybe.
Okay.
Not totally sure, but yeah, I don't know that that one's too groundbreaking. They were a good team.
Yeah, real good team. Like that, Washington and Lee up at 8. I thought they did some great stuff this year. Personally, loved watching them play. I think they made some good strides. Any key takeaways from them? Why you have them at 8 over Lynchburg? I know that those were
they beat them.
There you go. Yep, that'll do it.
Yeah. Will you?
Yep. When the time comes down to it, that's what's important: wins and losses. Lynchburg up at 9. I love that, but over Gettysburg.
Yeah, so that's the one that I've been waiting for you to get to. Gettysburg is tight. Obviously ends up with 5 losses, and like we said, the last of which is to a very solid CNU team. But the Swarthmore losses, right? 2 of those 5 losses are to Swarthmore, who then ends up losing to Grove City to end their season.
Yeah.
So, like,
and then electric the game, way that, mind you.
I mean, yeah, certainly. But, you know, like, that's at some point, like, it starts to be a domino effect of, you know, starting to count against Gettysburg there as well.
Yeah. Yeah, I wanted to put Lynchburg over Gettysburg myself, but I thought you'd call me a homer, so
yeah,
I didn't, but and I'm happy you agree with me there.
And just to kind of add a little more icing to that, same argument, the other loss is to Denison, you know, and obviously they have the win over Salisbury, which is kind of the one that, like, really perches them up.
Mm-hmm.
And so definitely an interesting year for them, but a good solid season. And they're another team that I'm sure has, you know, guys chomping at the bit to get up. And under, you know, early stages of the coaching staff that they're in, probably not in a situation where, you know, guys are going to be exactly like taking off seasons off and things like that. Like, I think they're going to be dudes that are working hard and ready to come back and, you know, make their mark on, you know, the program with a new coach.
For sure.
Or relatively new coach, I should say.
Like that. All right, so we'll get into the 11 through 15 here. This is where it definitely gets meaty. A lot of different teams could be in some different places, so we'll chat it out.
Certainly.
Here. Yep, but 11, we'll go with York. And then 12, we have Bowdoin. 13, St. Lawrence finished there. 14, Union got the spot there. And then we have 15 finished off with Denison. All right, so let's go back up to the top. York at 11. I would love to see him higher, but personally, I think this is where they stand. I think this is a pretty good spot for him.
Where do you have him in yours?
In my heart or in my brain?
Your brain.
My brain? Yeah. I think I had him at 11, too.
Oh.
Yeah.
Nice.
Right there. Do you think they deserve to be any higher? I don't think there is a case to make them any higher than 11.
I think that's well placed. I mean, the teams that are above them are a handful of teams that beat them, and within that, you know, like, there's crossover. But, yeah, no. I think that's a solid spot for them. And, frankly, like, they definitely had an interesting season where, like, their strength of schedule was really impressive.
They changed goalies halfway through the season.
Sure, yeah. Got to get that point in.
Got me in, of course.
But also, like, when it came down to Elite Eight time, like, York had either played or scrimmaged all 8 teams, mm-hmm. which, you know.
It's exactly what you
want. Awesome, right? Yeah. Like, had they still been alive, like, they would have been prepared, you know? And that's ultimately the goal, is to be ready to be prepared to make as deep a run as you can. It happened to be that Tufts was in their way, and Tufts, who was a pretty good, dang good team, you know, made it to the national championship as an undefeated team. Obviously, the unbelievable squad. So, yeah, I mean, I think that's a good spot for the Spartans.
Agreed. Yep. So, Bowdoin up at 12, though. I thought this one was particularly interesting, and I, too, had a tough time determining where I thought they should be. But all the way up at 12, why did you settle with them there?
I mean, the only loss that they have to anybody below that was Williams.
Mm-hmm.
And Williams, obviously, like, their season ends to Babson, who they probably wish, think they
probably, yeah,
you know,
probably wish they had that,
one back, right? And they had beat them earlier in the year, so Williams and Babson actually split. But anyway, so I don't know. I mean, they're a good team that really they have one blemish outside of teams that are ranked higher than that, and you know, I think it just kind of evens out.
Yep. Good call there. St. Lawrence at 13. I think that's a good spot for him, kind of right in the middle there in the mix. But then Union up at 14. kind of interesting there. I was kind of tough for me to personally judge them just because it was so kind of tough for him early on. You do have to take into account the injuries a little bit too and stuff like that. But up at 14, what kind of made you lock them in there?
Yeah, I mean, I like don't have anything groundbreaking for you. Like, they're a good team. The teams that they've lost to were also good teams. Clarkson, who beat them by one, RPI, like, got one on them. But like you said, RPI also went on a stint where they were winning a bunch of games and gave themselves as good of a chance as possible to make the tournament. Like, the Liberty League is a league where it's good teams that are familiar with each other, so you end up having that happen. I don't have anything groundbreaking for you other than they are a good team that is very solid defensively, had a very solid goalie, was solid facing off, and I would take them to beat any of the other teams on the list below them and any of the teams on the list above them. You know, like, we'd be talking about matchups and things like that.
Yep. All right. Good points there. We'll move on to the last section then, that's 16 through 20 here. So last up, we got Cabrini at 16. Swarthmore at 17 with that excellent run there at the end. Williams at 18. Stevens at 19. And then finishing off the list, we have Babson at 20.
And I think that's the one that's interesting, right? The other ones, like, kind of all fall where they fall. Like, all are within, like, a kind of relatively same range in terms of efficiency ratings, metrics, all that type of stuff. Like, it's all basically the same thing with those teams being kind of in a group. None of them really had any, like, huge marquee wins outside of Swarthmore, who beat Gettysburg twice. But, outside of that, they had some really close games, like, really close with Haverford, really close with Yersinus. And Yersinus ends up looking fine on the scoreboard, but that's a 9-8 game pretty deep into it. And then they get totally blown out both times that they play Dickinson. And then end up finishing the season, obviously, with a loss in overtime to Grove City, who, you know, most of the teams that we talked about for the bulk of the season on this podcast, when they saw Grove City, beat them by, you know, significant margins.
Mm-hmm. Well,
so Swarthmore, definitely a perplexing team. You take away those Gettysburg wins, or you have them split, and, you know, their season looks a little different. Obviously, they get those wins, and, you know, tons of credit to them. But outside of that, you know, it's a bit perplexing. And, you know, finishing where they do on the heels of that Grove City loss feels like a good spot for them.
Agreed. Yep. Very well said. So any other notes here or anything on this top 20?
Yeah, Babson cracking the list after on the heels of that Williams win.
Huge.
Right. So Babson gets in, finishes the season in the top 20. I don't think that I had them in the top 20 at all through the season.
I don't believe you did. I
had them in the top 30 for a good chunk of it. Mm-hmm. But I don't believe that they ever cracked the top 20 until this week.
Yeah. Yeah, huge, huge dub for them, and a good way to kind of end their season there. So congrats to Babson, top 20.
Boom.
Love it. All right. So before we end up here, I got a couple I think I got a couple takeaways I want to give to you.
All right.
Yeah.
The final edition of the Big Dog Big Takes.
The final Big Dog Big Takes. I hope you're ready for it.
I'm ready.
Oh. Love it. You want them?
Ready.
All right. All right. I'm going to go out on a limb, do some, what do you want to call it?
Too early predictions?
Way, way too early predictions. Yeah, let's throw two ways in there just so we know that it's very...
The way, way, way too early pre-ahead predictions for the 2024 season.
Yes, correct. And mind you, this all hinges on what we know now. So, you know, there could be people not coming back, we think are, vice versa, things like that. So plenty of things could change, and that's the kind of asterisk that I'm putting on all of this before I go into it.
Naturally.
Just to protect myself, of course.
Naturally. Yep.
But let me give you four way too early predictions right here. First, I'm going to go with the Centennial Conference winners, because I like to pick this way too early every year, and I'm always wrong every year.
Boom.
But next year is going to be the year I'm right.
All right.
I guess this year is going to be the year I'm right.
The
for
upcoming
next year.
Season.
Yes, yes. Future me is going to love what I just did here.
Yep.
Got it. Know why?
Why?
I think they finally do. I think Swarthmore takes the cake Ooh. In the Centennial Conference next Ooh. Year.
You're getting on board. You're on the train.
I am the conductor Ooh. Of said train.
No, you're not.
Yeah. Okay. Maybe not the conductor. I have a ticket though, first okay. class. Yeah. Yep. And I'm very happy to
first
be aboard.
First class ticket. I yep. like that.
Very happy to be aboard. I predict them to be our Centennial Conference champs.
Wow.
Yep. Looking forward to that. Next up,
though, I don't hate that take. They got a lot of that offensive guys coming back.
Mm-hmm.
Defense was young.
Yep. Max May, I believe, will still be there.
Max
for
May
him.
Plays for Muhlenberg, but That's I right. love Never your confusion. Mind. It's nope. late at night.
Nope, it is late. I'm sorry.
Ryan Pretzer was a freshman.
I was just going to say.
That's who you were thinking of.
Because it's a young stud. And
yep.
Yep.
Yep. Max May, not young, though. You just got confused.
It's late.
It happened.
Yeah.
But yes, Ryan Pretzer, freshman. They have lots of other freshman poles, young guys playing in front of them, some short sticks that'll get some age under an experience under their belt. I don't hate your take there, buddy boy.
Love it. Okay. All right. I'm going to give you another conference champ then.
All right. Keep them rolling.
And I'm going to go to the hotly contested NESCAC.
Ooh.
Yep.
Oop.
Yep. Hot take here. Hot yep. take. You ready for this?
Yeah, Tufts is going to win it again.
No.
Oh.
Our boys in purple are coming for it this
Amherst.
Next upcoming
You know
year.
Their whole attack is transferring.
I mean, I know it's going to be a different look.
Okay.
They're all gone, though? All three of them?
Two of the three for sure.
Okay. All right. That will be really sad. But I'm still believing in it. I still think they reload. They got guys after guys. We saw it this
That
would
have been a fun segment, but I don't want to break news or, like, talk about the kids without having permission.
Exactly. Yeah, that's not our place to maybe break that news if they don't want it
right,
out there.
If they haven't told their teams.
Yeah,
stuff like that.
Or maybe their families or friends or stuff like that.
Yeah.
Whatever. Who knows? Who knows? All right. But, yeah, give me Amherst next year.
All
right. NESCAC. Yep, you heard it right here first.
Okay.
Yep. All right. Next one I got up is the 2024 All-American goalie.
Oh,
yep.
My
first
gosh.
Teamer. You know who it's going to be?
Did you research to see if he's coming back?
I'm like 75% sure he's coming back. You don't think he's coming back?
I don't have no real reason to think. I assume. Who is it?
Hadley.
Yeah, he's a senior.
I thought this COVID thing.
Yeah, like, yeah. You can't assume anything though.
Okay.
But yeah, it's very possible.
Okay. His mom just followed me on Twitter.
Wow.
Yeah.
You should DM her and be like, is Tyler coming back next year?
Yeah. Is Tyler coming back?
That's cool. Congratulations.
Yeah. Thank you. I'm very excited.
Yeah.
Shout out Karen Hadley.
Wow.
You're the best. But I hope if he does come back, he's going to be your All-American goalie of the year. Count on it.
First team.
Stamp it. First team All-American.
All right.
Yep. All right. And lastly.
Yep.
You want the Natty Championship winner?
I do. That's what I've been. I want. I requested Final Four, but I'll take Championship.
I know. It's gonna. So I can play this two ways. I can play it what my heart says or what my brain says. Which one do you want? I can give you both.
Why don't you give us your brain Final Four, your heart champion?
All right, brain Final Four.
Heart champion.
Okay, brain Final Four is gonna be Tufts.
Ooh,
I think they come back. Okay. Yep. I think they get back there. Give me. Is Brando coming back?
Nah, he done.
He done? All right. Nope. Not Dickinson then. Give me York.
Ooh.
Yep.
They go north again?
Yep. They're going.
So Tufts and York to get into the north from the northern side?
Yep.
All right.
And then from the south, you're going to get Salisbury. I think they reload. They reload every year.
Naturally.
That's not a hot take. I know. I'm sorry. And. This one's going to be tough, this fourth spot.
Speaking of COVID in fifth and sixth years, Crossfire obviously just finished sixth, so he gone.
Yeah, he gone. I think Dowd's gone too, right?
I don't think so. I think he's a fifth. I think he was a fifth year.
Oh, that's exciting. Yeah, so I like my
Salisbury
take.
And
Jude?
Was a fifth year.
Oh, so he's gone.
Was a fifth year.
Oh. I don't know what that means anymore.
It means that he could use a sixth.
Oh, see, he can use a sixth, but Hadley's gunning four? I don't get this COVID stuff.
I'm just saying you can't assume. You were ready to crown him. I'm saying that there's a chance, and that technically speaking, they have six, and he's only used five.
Okay, all right.
So.
I like the technical speak.
He also, like, I just get the vibe of, like, we'll do whatever to play lacrosse.
Yeah.
So, he's, like, he's a ball. It's just my instinct.
He's a laxer at heart. Give me, you know, so give me Washington and Lee as my fourth.
Wow. You wait, like that's your fourth? Who's your third?
It was Salisbury, York, Tufts, Washington. Oh, sorry.
Okay, sorry.
That's my brain, or my
W now gets to the Final Four.
I think they get to the Final Four next year.
Okay.
Yep.
I like your style.
Thank you. Yep.
Super interesting.
And then my heart says York wins it all next year.
Naturally.
Yep.
Naturally.
They have to.
Naturally.
Their time to shine.
And who's your brain say wins it of the group?
Of that group.
If
right
that's
there?
Your 4-4 from your brain, who wins it?
Tufts wins it.
Wow.
Yeah. I think they reload next year. Yep. I think.
Back with a vengeance.
I saw them walk off the field.
Oh.
I was there.
They pulled on your heartstrings?
And they didn't pull on my heartstrings. No. I saw all of their faces watching Salisbury celebrate, and they're not going to lose again. I can almost guarantee it.
They Unless also, I believe, right. They also believe, I believe, have two of their three attackmen are out the door.
It might be a different, whole different landscape next year.
I bet they'll have some good players to fill in.
Yeah. They tend to do that.
I mean, he's so good at the midfield, and, like, his skill set fits there so well. But Charlie Tagliaferri has the, like, quarterback, like, alpha-ness to him to take over at X.
Mm, that would be good pick to do it too. I like that. I like that a lot.
I actually really enjoyed going up for the other games, and, like, every time his line would go out and then come back off the field, like, he was talking them through whatever the look was and, like, getting them organized for the next time that they went out as a group. And, like, he's definitely a cerebral player.
I like that. Love that. Any Caps conclusions or anything before we close this bad boy out?
No, we said that we would touch on it at the beginning and the end. Like we said, got to thank D3 Nation, right? So yep. Much love for you guys. We really appreciate everybody who's tuned in, listened, been along for the ride. I don't know what my word count is for the spring, but I bet you it's a pretty big number. So I appreciate everybody who's been along for the ride in terms of reading all that stuff. Like we said, we still have a few more things here on the slow roll, slow leak out. But yeah, we appreciate everybody. Numbers are up, pod numbers are up, listens are up, reads are up. Everything is up. D3 Nation, we love you. And we will see you in the 2024 season.
Next season.
Thank you. Rinse out, drop that low.